If somebody is coming regularly to hear Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that devotee will progress faster, for sure. Assuming, of course, that the hearing is done in a very faithful manner and a sincere manner. So this hearing is a very powerful process. Apart from the fact that hearing instills in our heart tremendous faith and actually devotion also, it clarifies our understanding of the philosophy. It makes us more determined. It gives us a higher taste in Krishna consciousness. And also we are able to answer other people's queries. We are able to explain better to other people about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And then reading, yes, reading and hearing at home, that's also very regular. Reading we'll come to a little later. The next point, keep your sadhana strong. Please remember that the best chanting you can do is early in the morning. So avoid unnecessary late nights. It is best to retire early at night so you can rise early in the morning and be fresh for your sadhana. Your japa is the most important activity of the day. Try to chant clearly and hear attentively. Be in a prayerful mood. So the third point is about your japa. As is mentioned here, this is the single most important activity of the day. We have many important things to do all day long, for sure. But amongst all of them, undisputedly, chanting the holy names of Krishna is our most important activity. And if we do our japa nicely, and especially early in the morning when the day is in the mode of goodness, when our mind is fresh and pure, the chanting will have the best effect. If you do this one thing right, everything else will be alright. This is the sutra. And we all have experienced that when you don't chant properly, everything goes wrong. The day goes wrong. It's like as if you got up from the wrong side of bed, you know. Ordinary people outside, they speak of things like that. The things just don't go well for you. You say, oh, you got up from the wrong side of bed. But that same happens to us when we don't chant our alarms properly. Yeah. Things don't work. And we get disturbed and other people misunderstand us. So many problems happen. But when you chant properly and strongly, then not only does the number of problems reduce, but when the problems happen, they get resolved easily, almost on their own. Experience some of this? It does happen, actually. You know that little incident when Prabhupada was chanting his rounds one time, he put his beads down. So for his 16 rounds, of course he was always remembering Krishna, that's another thing. He put his beads down and then he said, what did he say?
No, I can do whatever nonsense I like.
No. Not nonsense.
That's
the word. Now I can do any damn thing. But no, that doesn't mean he wasn't referring to any nonsense. He was any damn thing, meaning what he meant was he can go and take on the world now.
Okay.
He can go and preach, he can go and, you know, talk to the scientists and defeat them. He can go and defeat the Mayavadis and establish temples in different places. That's what he meant when he said any damn thing, which means he can tackle any challenge in Krishna consciousness. Not that he intended nonsense, stuff like that. So we will also feel empowered when we chant our names, or chant Krishna's names properly, nicely. So this is very important. It is also very helpful to come to the association of devotees to chant japa. You see, what happens at home is that usually there is no one to see what you are doing and what you are chanting. Right? No one checks. Or even the do, you're all complicit. Because if you don't chant properly, who's going to tell you? If you're sleeping when you're chanting, who's going to tell you? Because everyone who tells you will probably do the same themselves when they're chanting. So at home, you don't have that kind of incentive unless you're really strong. So either you can come to the temple whenever you can, once a week, twice a week, 7 days a week, whatever is possible for you. Or if you can't, gather with people who live in your neighborhood so you don't have to travel too far. Meet at some place and then chant together in a group. Or if you can't do that, then find a family member, sit together and chant. If you can't do that, chant alone, but chant in front of your deities at home, in your home temple, with Tulsi around. And chant with attention, chant with determination and devotion. And yes, three important points about japa. Hear attentively, chant clearly, and be in a prayerful mood. Okay, so that's about japa. Now you might think, what has it got to do with the Grihastashram? It's all about general sadhana bhakti, you know. But yes, these are the things that the fundamentals that we need to focus on first and foremost. Then the other issues, you know, disagreements between husband and wife and parenting problems and financial issues and this and that will all come later. The fundamental issues are here. If we focus on the fundamentals, the basics, then the other things will automatically get sorted out. That's why a household life is called Grihastha Ashram. So it's an ashram where we take, give so much emphasis on Krishna conscious activities. Number four, read Srila Prabhupada's books regularly and seriously. This will strengthen faith, conviction and understanding and help in keeping proper spiritual focus in your day-to-day life. Remember, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra will show us our proper direction in life. Without Shastra, without Srila Prabhupada's books, where would we be? We would not have any idea of what the direction our life should move in. We would be doing all sorts of other activities, speculatively imagining things. But Prabhupada's books and his teachings give us a very clear idea, a clear direction in which our life should move, the way we should live our life. So reading the books, as is mentioned here, will strengthen faith, conviction and understanding, and it will help us keep the focus. And it also brings a lot of taste. How many of you, when you read Prabhupada's books, you get some taste? When you regularly sit down and actually study, you get a very nice taste. It's a very blissful experience. So in household life as well, these things are very important. So whatever we're discussing now are common for all ashrams, but sometimes people in the household life may think, because I'm a householder, so it's all right. I need not focus so much on these things, but that's not a fact. Even in household life, these things have to be emphasized. They have to be kept in the center. Number five, all the members of the family, young and old, should gather together at home at least once every day to have arati, kirtan and some discussion or reading from the scriptures. Srila Prabhupada mentions this in his purports. Yeah, this is one thing I emphasize a lot whenever I meet Grihasthas. I remember this purport very much. And Prabhupada says, it's important that householders should do that. The only time you're excused from doing it is when you go to some other satsang or another gathering, either in the temple or elsewhere, where you're going to do the same thing. If you're not going anywhere for another devotional program, then definitely you should do that at home. Sometimes devotee's hour should be do it in the morning or in the evening. Of course, both times is the best. But morning, if you can't do it so early in the morning and you have to rush off to work and prepare, you do other household chores, then it's fine, it's fine. And you have many household chores to do, then do it in the evening. But do it. It's very important, not only for the children, but also for the adults, that this culture is created in the house, that centers around the house temple and the hearing and chanting about Krishna in front of the deities at home. I remember one gentleman, many years ago, he was a top-notch executive in a big company. And he had quit. He had made lots of money. And he had quit because he wasn't finding it very nourishing. So he wanted to do something that was worthwhile, that appealed to his heart. So he got into some other social activities and so on. And one time somehow I happened to meet him through another devotee. And in the course of the talk, he mentioned that, you know, my father was in the army. He was a very strict man. And he was a very great devotee of Lord Ram. And every day in the morning and evening, and especially in the evening, he said, all of us young children in the house, we were made to sit down. And he would do some kirtan of Lord Ram. And then he would read from the Ramayana and explain a few things to us. And sometimes as children we would resist it and we would feel, oh, we want to go and play and we had so many other things to do, but he was a military man, you couldn't say no to him. So we would sit down. And after we grew up and we went our own ways and then I went on into corporate life and everything. And the life that I have seen in my professional career, the kind of people I have met and the mentalities that they have, that experience is so bad because I know what kind of things these people are doing and thinking and how they act and so on. And the kind of bad habits that they indulge in and the kind of things that they do really to get to the top in the material world. I realize now that it is only because of those evening sessions with my father that actually protected me. Otherwise today I would have been an alcoholic or a womanizer and all these things. I would have been all of that, just like my other associates are. But because of this evening program, now I remember that. I miss it a lot. But those days are gone. My father is no more. And I remember those days and I think, I haven't given that to my children. Then I remember this purport of Srila Prabhupada and I told him, yes, it's very important. And especially this day and age when the atmosphere outside is so bad, so distracting, even for adults. So it is necessary to give your children the protection. It's called a kavach, a shield. So by having this spiritual culture in the house based on hearing and chanting about Krishna, that will create a beautiful bonding between the family members and also a very deep spiritual culture, and it will empower the children to continue on in their spiritual life when they grow up and to keep away from bad habits. Number 6. Engage yourself in some seva regularly. It is good to take some responsibility, small or big, according to one's situation. Serve with humility, enthusiasm, sincerity and eagerness, without seeking any gross or subtle reward from the service. Do not seek or be attached to position or prestige that may be associated with any service. So this is another important point. Seva. We must all do some seva. Every single one of us. Yes, we should do seva at home, most naturally. And even to your neighbors, you can speak about Krishna. That's also service, it's seva. You can give prasadam to people in your neighborhood. That is seva. At the same time, it's also nice to connect yourself to the temple. Come here whenever you can. And when you the temple, take some little or big responsibility for some service. It could be a small thing, a very simple thing if you don't have much time. Or it could be something more elaborate if you have more time and inclination. But take some responsibility for Krishna. You see, when you do things at home, if you're disciplined, then it's fine. But usually when it's left to us, we're not often so regulated and disciplined. So you may do some service at one time and then you may not do it another time. You have to be completely self-driven. But if you take some responsibility in the temple where you're answerable to everybody, then you get that incentive, that push to come and take that responsibility for Krishna. Some people may come and do a little bit of deity service every day. It may be cooking, it may be helping the backup of the deity. Someone may come helping for crowd control, or for cleaning the temple, or for serving prasadam, or anything. So many types of services are available, small and big. And this service actually will give us so much more meaning to our life. Sometimes we see here the elderly ladies in the kitchen when we come by and they're so happily doing their work, whatever it is, they're cutting or preparing something with their caps and aprons sitting there and so happily doing different types of service. Imagine if they didn't have access to this kind of service. They would have been in their homes, just sitting there, trying to do something, not having an opportunity. Here they're sitting with other devotees, they're chanting as they do some service all day long, they're doing that. So much happiness. Now Janmashtami coming up, we can come and offer some services. Yesterday I had gone for a walk with Dayananda Maharaj here in the fields. So many devotees were there digging up, doing something to set the cabling for the festival or something like that. You see, this seva is our wealth. So, if you want to be wealthy, you have to accumulate different kinds of spiritual wealth. The chanting and hearing of Krishna's glories and holy names, of course, is very important. But also you cultivate the wealth of seva, of different types of services to Krishna. Number 7. Associate with devotees as much as possible. Live together in the society of devotees with a feeling of friendship towards other devotees and in a mood of service to them. Ensure that this friendship is not spoiled by ego, envy, self-interest, insensitivity or negligence. Keep Krishna in the center of these relationships. So that's very important. The glories of association of devotees have been described in all the scriptures. So trying to avoid finding fault in devotees, even though we may sometimes see faults, whether they exist in reality or not, or they're just our perception, is another matter. But even if those faults are real, not worrying so much about the defects and faults we see in other devotees, we should see their good qualities, the fact that they are devotees of Krishna, they are trying to surrender to Krishna, they are chanting Krishna's names, they are having prasadam. And we should live together in the company of such devotees in a feeling of friendship. That's very important. What kind of friendship? That friendship has to be in a mode of service to them. So we have to consider ourselves as servants of the devotees. and ensure that the baggage of our material conditioning doesn't intervene or interfere with our relationships amongst devotees. What are those negative conditionings that come in the way, like ego, self-interest, envy, and so on? That can spoil relationships between devotees. So we have to be very cautious. Our association of devotees is very, very precious for us. Without satsang, we will not be able to continue our Krishna consciousness. It is not possible in this day and age to practice spirituality all alone. And the relationships are not simply sentimental, based on the bodily concept of life. While we are concerned with the condition of somebody's body or mind, and the extensions of the body and mind, which means the person's family situation and health and financial position, etc., we are concerned and we try to find practical solutions to them, but fundamentally, we have to keep Krishna in the center of the relationship. We do not simply want sentimental relationships that can sometimes take us away from Krishna. The next point, as important as the one that we just discussed. Point number 8. Avoid the association of non-devotees as much as possible. Where such association is not avoidable, at work, for example, perform your duty well and be socially present. But be careful to not let their non-devotional consciousness rub off on you. Do not join them and take pleasure in the things that they take pleasure in, namely, mundane gossip, movies, sports, and violation of the four regulative principles. Set a good example as a devotee and speak and act in a way that will make them feel positive about Krishna consciousness. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has defined a devotee as being one who avoids the association of non-devotees. Asat Sangatyag A Vaishnava Achara. So a Vaishnava is one who scrupulously avoids the association of non-devotees. So when we avoid non-devotees, their consciousness doesn't rub off on us. But then, the fact of the matter is, all of us have to associate with non-devotees, not just the household. Even those who are not householders have to go out either for preaching or traveling or for whatever purpose. So then, our association with non-devotees should be in a way that facilitates their growth and their faith in Krishna consciousness and doesn't jeopardize our own Krishna consciousness. Yes. What is a sentimental relationship with a devotee? Okay, let's say there's somebody who's attached to doing something that is not good for his or her spiritual life. Let's say, and is positively harmful. And then we say, we're good friends. And so we say, okay, you know, come on, your friends, come along with me, let's do this. You know, for the sake of friendship, just come along, let's do it. And then we do something that's not correct. Or we encourage that devotee to do it in the name of friendship because we're friends. But that friendship doesn't keep Krishna in the center of the relationship. Come, let's go to the park, you know, let's go for this, or let's go for that, let's do this and that. The example is a little extreme, but it gives the point. And you can extend that to more subtler things as well. So coming back to the avoidance of association of non-devotees, because all of us do have to associate for work and for preaching and for other purposes, So how should we associate them with them? Srila Prabhupada narrated a little story one time, and I'm sure you've all heard it. I will repeat it anyway. One time there was a monkey who lived on a tree on the bank of a river. And there was a crocodile who lived in that pond actually, not the river. And for many days the crocodile was eyeing this monkey because he liked some good food. But the monkey was sharp, he was careful to avoid the crocodile. And one time the crocodile said to the monkey who was sitting on the tree, "Come, let me take you for a joyride in the pond. Just sit on my back and I'll take you." So the monkey, being a monkey, didn't think. He jumped. He said, yeah, good idea. He jumped. And then the crocodile started going towards the middle of the lake, and he started going further and further down into the water, and the monkey was getting alarmed. "My dear friend, crocodile, what's happening? You're going down into the water. I can't swim. I'm going to die." So the crocodile laughed and said, "Actually, I'm going to give a feast to my wife. It's been a long time." I'm paraphrasing Prabhupada's narration, okay? So, well, my wife below, she likes, you know, eating the heart of a monkey. So I'm going to take you down when you die, and then my wife can have a feast below. The monkey was sharp, so he started laughing loudly. The crocodile was curious, "Why are you laughing like this?" He said, "I wish you had told me this before." "So what do you mean?" "I would have brought that on my heart with me." "So what do you mean? Where have you kept it?" "It's up on the tree." "So if you just take me back, I'll go and bring it, and then you can go down to your wife." So the crocodile, being a crocodile, said, "All right." So he came back, and then when he was near the shore, near enough, the monkey had jumped. And then went up to the tree, and what did he do? He did this. The monkey, he sat there. So what's the moral of the story? The moral is, you may associate with people, but don't give them your heart. Yes? What does it mean to not give people your heart? It means to not relish the kind of pleasures that they relish. Not to take happiness and joy in the things in which they find happiness and joy. Whether it's going to the pub or doing this or that. Basically non-devotional activities. Activities which are harmful for our spiritual life. We should avoid those things. So we can be courteous to them, pleasant, nice, etc. And act in a nice way, be kind, be compassionate and everything. But be careful to not get pulled into their consciousness. We should not let their non-devotional consciousness rub off on us. Rather, we should see that our devotional consciousness rubs off on them. Next point, number 9. This is an extension of the previous point. We're talking of non-devotees in general. This point speaks about, you know, those who are immediately around you, like neighbors, etc. Point number 9. Similarly, while staying strong in your devotional principles, personally, deal with family, in-laws, neighbors, friends, etc. in a way that will increase their appreciation for Krishna consciousness. Sometimes devotees complain that some of the family members are not devotees and they're very upset. And then they resort to little harsh language to try to persuade other family members or their friends or whatever to come to Krishna consciousness. And it often has the opposite effect. Those family members actually go further away from Krishna consciousness. They don't come. So Krishna consciousness cannot be forced on people. Even Krishna did not force it on Arjuna. So we should not try to bulldoze people into accepting the path of devotion or to dominating them and forcing them to do it. Rather, we should set such a nice example to them and be even better and kinder and more compassionate and so on and do our duties towards them even better than before, so they will think, yeah, actually, my husband or my wife or my son or daughter or my father, mother, whatever, my friend, has become a better person after being a devotee of Krishna. There's no point we becoming devotees and chanting 32 rounds every day and snapping at everybody at home and, you know, being not spending time with them and being harsh with them. What's the use? And then they're going to go further away from Krishna consciousness. There are many instances like this. Of course, one has to strike a balance. One has to protect one's own Krishna consciousness as well. Even if other people in the family or our friend circle are not devotees, we should ensure that we don't compromise our personal spiritual practices. We must remain very strong in these. Number 10. Avoid distracting mundane entertainment offered through cinema, TV, internet and other means. Be careful that you are not overwhelmed by electronic gadgetry, communication devices and social media. Use them judiciously as tools, if you must. Do not become helpless tools in their hands. This is a topic in itself. Actually, each of these points are topics in themselves, right? There's so much to say on this, and we must be careful, because it is a fact that in this modern day of information overload and an overload of opportunities for sense gratification, being where you are, and there are unlimitedly newer and newer opportunities to forget Krishna. Maya creates innovative ways to make us forget Krishna. So we have to be very careful. What appears very tempting and attractive may actually lead us away from Krishna. So modern technology has its benefits and we may use it, but we have to use it judiciously, with discrimination. And the important point here is that we use these things as tools and we don't become tools in the hands of electronic gadgets and technology. Number 11. Take decisions, small or big, in life, according to how your Krishna consciousness will be affected, directly or indirectly. Consider the short-term and long-term implications of your decision. Accept whatever is favorable for your Krishna consciousness and reject that which is unfavorable. This should be the ultimate criterion in decision making. So Rupa Goswami has given us that formula. What is that formula? From the natural instruction?
Always remember Krishna.
No, I mean.